All right, people. Some reason my microphone's not working. Could you guys hear me okay? Glenn, can you hear me okay? Welcome to the world-famous Stuttering John podcast. Been scrambling around trying to figure out why my microphone is not working. So now I have to go with the computer audio. So I hope it sounds okay. Could you guys hear me okay? Nikki B, Sean, somebody. Anyway, let's go get let me get Glenn in here. Hey, Glenn.
John, how we doing?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, loud and clear.
All right, good. Because for some reason, like, my Scarlet is not working. I thought you weren't coming on till 2.
Oh, I thought I was coming on at 3 o'clock my time, Eastern time, no?
Yeah, that's fine with me, brother.
All good.
There's never a time that I don't want to talk to you, but Jennifer Cohn's going to join us in a little while, the election fraud expert.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I hope that's okay.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah, so how's it going?
It's going all right. 2 weeks, you know, you're counting down, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. So what do you think about all this Hunter Biden BS?
So he's only fooling the gullible, right, John? I mean, think about it. So Rudy Giuliani is apparently driving down the street and he pulls over and he finds an old laptop in the ditch somewhere. He picks it up and he says, hey, this kind of smells like Hunter Biden, right? Now, the story that we got was almost that ridiculous, right? The laptop left in a repair shop and the guy who runs the repair shop is blind, but it has a Bo Biden sticker on it. So he calls Rudy Giuliani's friend. You can almost picture Giuliani over in Ukraine meeting with what we now know are, you know, Russian intelligence operatives. And they're like, you know, hey, comrade Rudy, we got a laptop for you. Here you go. And then Rudy carries it over to the United States and plants it. It's just that ridiculous. And I'll tell you what, this is foreign interference in a U.S. election. And Rudy Giuliani will need to be charged beginning in January because we know Bill Barr's not going to do it before then.
No. And what do you but the New York Post, could they be sued, you know, for something like this?
They could if they were intentionally peddling a false story. And it sounds fishy as all get out. You know, the alleged reporter wouldn't even put his name to the article. The whole thing stinks. This is tabloid garbage. And, you know, it all culminates with Donald Trump sitting in the Oval Office. And it's always obscene when I see him peddling garbage out of the Oval Office, holding up, right, the article like it's a National Enquirer magazine, you know, front page. And the whole thing, it's almost over. You know, justice is almost here. These guys are about to disappear like a miracle. And then our job is going to be making sure they're held accountable in court.
No, I know. And I'm just like, I mean, they're trying to simulate what they did with Hillary Clinton, like what James Comey did. It's so blatantly obvious. And Giuliani, man, Glenn, as what happened to this guy? He used to be a respectable, you know, attorney and mayor. What the hell?
Yeah, in a strange way, I think 9/11 gave sort of rebirth to Rudy Giuliani. Rumors before that were he was on his way out because of all of the problems that he has. And I think we so desperately wanted people to rally around after 9/11. I did. We all did. And he was one of those figures that people ended up rallying around, really, for lack of anybody else. He was, you know, he was in a position where everybody looked to him. And I think that propped him up for another couple of decades, where he probably, had it not been for 9/11, he would have been gone long ago.
Have you ever met him?
Not personally, no.
No, it just seems like so bizarre that he's on the Trump train when wasn't he going against him at some point? On the like, what is going on? Glenn, this is my big question. Yeah. Why in the world are people like Ron DeSantis, who's an idiot, and, you know, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, Rudy Giuliani, why are they in bed with this guy when they know how bad and awful he is?
Because all they care about is power, and they are scared to death of a tweet berating them from Donald Trump, because that would probably cause Donald Trump's base to walk away from a DeSantis, from a Rubio. And they are small, cowardly men, all of whom are going to get theirs, I believe, beginning in January. It's either a fear of losing power, or for some of them, I think they are compromised. For example, Lindsey Graham, when you see the 180s, he's done, right? Donald Trump will destroy the party and will deserve it. And now he's my best golfing buddy. Listen, he said on TV, Russia hacked my emails. And Russia has never released a single Lindsey Graham email. What does that tell you? They are holding on to it, and they're leveraging it, and they are using it to wring every drop of Donald Trump support out of Lindsey Graham. That's all it can be.
Yeah, and it's so obvious. Like, Sarah Kendzior has that book, Hiding in Plain Sight. And really, like, you could just do a timeline on all this. And, you know, Lindsey Graham, you know, hold the tape and use it against me when, you know, about the Supreme Court justice pick. And I do want to ask you about Amy Coney Barrett. Now, obviously, she's going to get appointed because, you know, there's no way to stop. Is there any chance any of the Republicans, you know, besides Collins and Murkowski, is there going to be is there any slight hope that any Republican will vote no?
I think it's very unlikely. I think she's going to get confirmed. And I thought her confirmation hearings were pretty obscene. You know, what she, I guess what really angers me most is she tries to sort of cloak her ideology in phony legal doctrines, like super precedent. John, for 30 years, I was a prosecutor. I've argued lots of cases in appellate courts as well as trial courts. There's no such thing as super precedent. It's not a thing. A few academics have written about, well, we think there are some cases that have been around for so long and are so firmly established, and nobody argues they should be overruled. So we're going to put a label on them like super precedent. That's a thing in a law review article. It's not a thing in the practice of law, appellate or otherwise. But what does Amy Coney Barrett do? Because we know she is deeply ideological, and I'm not going to touch her religion because I will fight for her religion and her right to practice it. But when her ideology, whether it's based on religion, upbringing, environment, heredity, I don't care. When her ideology can control what 330 million Americans will be subjected to, then I got a beef with that. So when she says super precedent is something like Brown versus Board of Education, okay, brilliant. We're all happy that she says that, because that means we can't go back to Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal government-sponsored racial segregation, because Brown versus Board of Education killed that. Wonderful, right? So she calls that super precedent. She also calls Loving versus Virginia super precedent. That case is where it used to be a crime for a black and a white to marry. Loving versus Virginia said no. Interracial marriage is a protected fundamental right that we as Americans have. That's great. She said, that's super precedent. We can't touch it. But John, here's where she goes off the rails. She then says a case like Griswold versus Connecticut, not super precedent. I can go back and give that a second look. You know what that is? In 1965, the Supreme Court said, you can't make it a crime for married couples to purchase contraceptives. Amy Coney Barrett says, that's not super precedent. She might have to revisit that. Are you effing kidding me? Really? Married couples, we're going to criminalize the purchase of contraceptives for anybody, never mind married couples. This is her testimony when you kind of tease through what she was saying. She then, of course, said Roe versus Wade, not super precedent. She may have to revisit that. Let the government crawl up inside a woman's uterus, deny women their right to autonomy over their reproductive decisions, which is insanity. But she says it's not super precedent, so she might have to revisit it. She then says the Affordable Care Act case, NFIB versus Sebelius, not super precedent. So she might feel free to go back and strike that down and deprive tens of millions of people of health care insurance and coverage of pre-existing conditions. Because in her mind, her ideology, not super precedent. And here's the one that makes me as angry as all the others. It's the Obergefell case. which is only 5 years old now. It was decided in 2015, marriage equality, right? Just like blacks and whites can marry, thankfully. So in 2015, the Supreme Court said, you can marry whoever you love. You can marry whoever you want. A man can marry a man. A woman can marry a woman. It's not for the government to make that unconstitutional, unlawful, and punish you. She says, oh, that's not super precedent. I may have to go back and revisit
oh,
that.
Oh, boy.
And, John, this is based on ideology. Whether it's born of religion or not, I don't want to go there because that doesn't matter. If you have an ideology that is so out of step with the American people, then you don't need to be on our Supreme Court, period. But she will be.
Oh, my God. Here, let me bring Jennifer Cohen in, if that's okay with you, Glenn. Here we go. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, guys. Hello.
Hi. Are you here with Glenn Kirshner?
Hi, Glenn. Nice to meet you.
I don't know if you just heard my rant about Amy Coney Barrett.
I did. Yeah, I was interested to hear it. I've been not following her confirmation hearings very closely at all. So, yeah, it's very depressing. Very depressing. Is there anything we can do about it? Or did you cover that already?
No, we haven't gotten there. John, can I transition?
Yeah, let me just tell Jennifer. Glenn's a 30-year prosecutor and a commentator on MSNBC. But I just
wanted to... And yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. And yeah, go ahead. I would like what can we do about it?
So here's what I think we have to do about it. So during the history of our nation, the Supreme Court justice numbers have fluctuated between a low of 5 and a high of 10. 9, not a magic number, not a constitutionally required number. And here's the argument that I've been making all along. You know, the Republicans for a full year reduced the number of Supreme Court justices from 9 to 8 when they refused unconstitutionally refused to give Merrick Garland a confirmation hearing. Mind you, that was absolutely in violation of the Constitution. Article 2, Section 2 says the Senate gives advice and consent on a Supreme Court justice nomination. Mitch McConnell said, I am violating the Constitution by refusing to fulfill the Senate's advice and consent responsibility. So they reduced the number, in fact, from 9 to 8 for nearly a full year. I don't want to hear that Joe Biden can't come in and add a few or more than a few justices to the Supreme Court, because that is lawful and constitutional, whereas what the Republicans did to Merrick Garland was unconstitutional. So
they
sound like it's a dirty word. Joe Biden's going to be court packing. No, he's going to try to remedy what Mitch McConnell broke. And that's what I believe has to be done. The same has to be done across.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. If we win, I think it will be done.
Well, Jennifer, is there something going on with you over there? It's like, 'cause I keep getting this like squeaking noise.
Huh? I don't know.
Are you hearing it, Glenn?
Not really.
Maybe it's just me because I hear as if something is playing in the background, but it could just be the voices in my head. I'm not sure.
No, I don't know. I should have probably worn headphones. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what usually. Do you have headphones nearby?
I do. Well, not that nearby. I mean, I could try to, if we're going to be here for a while, I could try to get them. I'm worried my backdrop's going to fall because it's not virtual. Everything is barely, including myself, is barely
I'll take you out, and then I'll bring you back in as soon as you have them on.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Yeah, because, you know, I keep hearing it, and I want everyone to be able to hear everybody clearly. Yeah, Ziggy says it sounds like a fan. Yeah, it was something like... But you didn't hear it, Glenn.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah, but Amy Coney Barrett, here's my problem. Now, well, I'm going to ask you point blank. Is she going to overturn the ACA?
She's going to try. She's already said she disagrees with Chief Justice Roberts' opinion. And here's what I'm going to say, John. In full disclosure, when I read Chief Justice Roberts' opinion, I was pretty skeptical, too, because what he did was he read something that said penalty. And he said, I'm going to convert it to a tax. He did that because He cared about the institution. He cared about the fact that he didn't want to be seen as striking down really, really important legislation that was going to give health care to tens of millions of Americans. So he found a creative way to do it. And you can say, you know what, that's not really a judge's role. But I'm okay with it because I don't think it did violence to the Constitution. Yes, it was creative, but I think it was creative in a good way. And I don't want to say the means always justify the ends because you have to stick to the Constitution when you're a Supreme Court justice. But I believe she's going to come in and she's going to do everything she can, as she has already talked about in lectures, to try to overrule the ACA. But here's the good news, John. Once Biden is in and the House remains in Democrats' control and the Senate flips, which it will, then all it takes is a little bit of a legislative tweak. Do you realize all they have to do is pass new legislation that modifies the Affordable Care Act from a penalty to a tax, and it's problem solved? And
that's what I thought.
This issue goes away like a miracle.
Glenn, that's, you know, I was thinking the same thing. Can't they just tweak it a little bit and then just do it again?
You got it.
So, I swear on my life, I was thinking that the other day. I go,
make a good lawyer, John. You make a good lawyer.
That's so funny. Yeah. Wow.
There's always a lawful workaround for the Republicans' unlawful shenanigans. There's always a lawful workaround. We just have to have the political will to do it.
Now, and I'll bring Jennifer in. I think she's ready here.
Hey, Jennifer. Uh-oh. I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
What?
Can you hear me well or no?
Yeah. Yeah.
You sure?
It sounds good. Yeah, it sounds all right.
All right. I'm not sure I'm hearing you. Hang on. I'm sorry. Technical difficulties. Say something else.
Hello, Jenny. Well, hello, Jenny.
Well, it'll have to do.
Now I can't hear you. Oh, man, I hate these kind of things, Glenn. You don't have these problems at MSNBC, I'm sure.
Other people are in control, not me. If I were in control, there would be problems.
Jen, do you hear me?
Yeah, I'm not thrilled with this headphone situation, though. I guess I should have done this before I got on, huh?
No, it's okay. I mean, you know, look, I'll never attest to be the most professionally technical show in the world, but I know that the message is good, and that's all that's all that I care about.
Okay, well, do you still hear that squeaking or no?
No.
Okay, all right, so that's good. That's what matters most. Anyway, okay. How are you?
Great. Now I'm going to ask Glenn and you, and then Jennifer, feel free to chime in. Glenn, Roe v. Wade, will it get overturned with this lunatic?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say 51% of me wants to say no. But if it does get overturned, it's going to go back to the states, and then it's going to be like litigation nirvana for lawyers, because every state is going to enact its own law. Some will try to impose excessive restrictions on a woman's reproductive rights, and it's going to be, you know, a full employment act for lawyers, quite frankly, and that's the last thing we need. But I'm gonna stick with no. I think Roberts is going to, and I think Gorsuch has surprised us a little bit on the individual rights front. So I'm gonna stick with no. She's not going to succeed in killing Roe v. Wade.
Jennifer.
So I read somewhere that people are really, really lousy at making predictions, even when they, at least political predictions, even when they're really informed on the issues, which I would say I'm not, especially on the temperament of each individual justice. But I don't know. I guess what I would say is we are heading that way unless we get a grip on our election system and come to grips with the insecurity of our election system, including as to down ballot state races, which if this does get turned over to the states, those will matter a whole lot. And really, there are just no election integrity controls, especially as to those down ballot races. And of course, that is my issue. So it's sort of like a Rorschach ink blot. I see everything through the lens of election integrity. But that is, I mean, I do think we are heading that way unless we have a real a real reckoning and awakening about the vulnerabilities in our system, and that we need a way to verify election outcomes that we really failed to implement between 2016 and now.
Well, and that's the other problem, Glenn. And I'm gonna have you chime in on this one. But the question is for Jennifer. This is why I really wanted to get you on. We are already seeing in Virginia, Florida, where the wires were cut, you know, the last day of the registration. Out here in California, Baldwin Park, they set fire to a ballot drop box. I don't know if I'm sure you know about that, Jen.
Yeah, and I think I saw that. Yep.
Yeah, which, you know, so obviously, and then I just saw today, and this is where, you know, well, I'll get both of your opinions on it. A cop in Florida with a Trump-Pence.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's voter intimidation. Can I just say two things? Go ahead. What's your question? I'm sorry, what?
This is my problem, Glenn, is that, you know, here we have, like, all we want is a fair election process. And it looks like the GOP is doing everything they can to make it an unfair election process.
Yeah, Jenny.
Well, they absolutely are. And then we ourselves, the Democratic Party, has a real blind spot for the possibility that they would actually rig the vote totals electronically as well. And that blind spot worries me a great deal. All of the experts said after 2016, the one thing we needed to have was robust manual audits for every race using a reliable record of voter intent, which most experts say should be a hand-marked paper ballot. So you would conduct like not a full recount for every race, but you would do like a statistically meaningful sample of the ballots and compare that against the electronic totals. And it would have to be required by law so that it would have some teeth to it. Like if you found a problem, it could escalate to a full manual recount. And then you could actually change the outcome to reflect the correct outcome. Utter failure. The GOP blocked legislation, the PAVE Act, that would have required the one type of manual election audit that all experts pretty much recommend, which is called a risk-limiting audit. So the GOP blocked that. It would have required it for all federal races. Only three states have laws now that require this type of audit, and even they only require it for a couple of races. And we are really looking at a massive effort by the GOP, not just as to the presidency, but they have been on those state legislative races for a decade. And we do not have any mechanism to confirm the veracity of election outcomes as we head into 2020. That is an essential failure of all election officials in the swing states. The three states that did these risk-limiting audits, by the way, are Colorado, Rhode Island, and Virginia. But even Virginia's, there was a recent article that said, well, it's great that they're doing this great procedure, but they do it after the results are finalized. So it actually has no ability to correct the election outcome. It won't matter. I mean, maybe you could do some complicated, you know, it'd end up in the courts. Like, can you somehow go through the courts sideways? But officially, it doesn't matter. It's like you do it, you're required to do it, but officially it's a legal nullity. And so, we need to find ways to try to verify these outcomes one way or another. And, you know, I'm working on a variety of projects, but none of them are going to be as good as if lawmakers and election officials had done their freaking job and, you know, implemented this ability to verify electronic outcomes in November. We don't have that. And it's really upsetting, unacceptable.
And Glenn, like, how about this cop wearing this mask? I mean, that's voter intimidation. Isn't that illegal?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that he should be promptly pulled from duty and hopefully fired. And I'd be really curious to ask Jenny if I can, John. And it's one of those questions about predicting the future. But I guess we know Mitch McConnell's number, right? He was going to kill all legislation that he wanted to kill. And that was basically everything.
Anything to protect elections, but yes.
And what do you think the prospect is? Let's assume that the Dems take control. What do you think the prospect is that we can then put meaningful election security legislation in place, you know, before the Republicans take over again and do everything, you know, they have been doing to keep trying to cheat?
I would be cautiously optimistic, but it is not a sure thing because the Democrats have fallen victim to a lot of the misinformation that's spread by voting machine vendors about, you know, that they'll say things like our systems never connect to the internet, even though independent experts all say that many of them do through, you know, these wireless modems that have been installed in since about 2015. But they believe the election, they believe the vendors, and then the election officials believe the vendors, and then the lawmakers believe the election officials. And it's this sort of circle of misinformation that's out there. And unfortunately, it's a lot of accounts, you know, with blue check marks. And I'd say about half of the mainstream media gets it right and sees through it. And about half of it, sometimes even within the same, you know, like the New York Times, sometimes they'll do an article by someone who's really great, like Kim Zetter. And then other times they'll do an article by somebody else that repeats all of the misinformation from the vendors. And it's just really hard to get traction for meaningful reform that way. I hope that Senator Ron Wyden, though, would be at the forefront of any such effort, because he seemed to be the only member of Congress, as far as I could tell, who really got it.
Are you going to offer up the services, Jen, to the...
I always would. Of course I would, but I don't know. I don't imagine that most of them will be reaching out to me. Senator Wyden's office did, but other than him, not so much. And I'm sure many of them who care about election security are aware of my account at this point, but that's why I'm not that we'll have a lot more luck than we do currently. But, you know, there are a lot of cut arounds. The devil is in the details. And so, yeah, we'll probably maybe get them to agree to require some form of manual audit. But then election officials will complain and say it's too much trouble and to do a really meaningful one. And so it'll get watered down. And then the whole meaning of a reliable paper trail is, God, that's been the last 3 years trying to convince the Democrats to argue that paper from touchscreens is not considered really reliable because nobody looks at it. And especially for those down ballot races, it's an invitation for fraud, really, to flip those races or delete them and nobody's going to notice. And even if they do, you can't prove that you just didn't hit the button, that it wasn't your own fault.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have a few Congress people on this show, Jen, and I'm going to ask David Cicilline and Carolyn Maloney to make sure that they put your name in the hat. And Glenn, you have to be Attorney General.
And I mean, quite frankly, if they were to reach out to me, what I would really do, I mean, I would love to have a conversation with them and just sort of communicate my overview visions of where the issues have been, because I really have followed the markets closely. But I would refer them to probably two people in particular, Hari Hursti, who I'm sure they know, who's an internationally renowned election security expert. And he absolutely gets it and understands that we shouldn't be naive about the possibility of nefarious actors, even within, you know, not just Russia, but the GOP. I'm not speaking for him. I'm reading between the lines, but, Marilyn Marks at the Coalition for Good Governance and did really, she actually got paperless touchscreens deemed unconstitutional in a federal court to rule that in the state of Georgia, which is historic. But, those two in particular and Susan Greenhall. So certainly I would have a lot of important referrals to make.
Yeah, because this is ridiculous. This is supposed to be the most powerful country in the world, and we can't have a fair election. I mean, it's just insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of the problem is our ballots are really, really long compared to other countries, or so I've been told, and therefore we use a lot more machinery than other countries do. And as soon as you get into machinery, especially from private vendors, you get into, and it really makes it very, very difficult to exercise any kind of oversight, and it gets very complicated, and then election officials just really rely on what these private vendors say. And, you know, America's largest vendor has donated $30,000 to the Republican State Legislative Committee since 2013 and does not appear to have donated. It's just very unsettling. We don't really know what the hell is going on. And so it's really a blackout.
Well, this is what scares me and Glenn, is that Donald Trump, even though you can't believe, obviously everything he says or tweets is just a lie, but he's like tweeting how confident he is that he's going to win. That scares me only because does he know something that we don't?
You know, he might. I don't know what Putin told him this morning, but I don't believe for a minute he's going to win. And Jenny's commentary scares me considerably. And I follow her and it's always.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's thought provoking.
And vice versa.
And I am definitely not a voting expert, voting security expert. I just, you know, with my finger in the wind and seeing what happened in the 2018 midterms when, you know, we as a people, Americans, were abused pretty good by the Trump administration before we went to the polls in 2018 and we flipped 41 seats in the House. We have been abused like 1,000 times more now than we were prior to the 2018 election. I should say 223,000 times more by the criminal, the criminal deaths that were caused by Donald Trump, the coronavirus deaths. And that's something we're going to have to take up in January because he absolutely bears criminal responsibility for all of that. I was pleased to see Lawrence Tribe actually came around to that position, I think yesterday in a tweet. But I think that the people in 2016, when they were polled, and I'm going to go out of my little comfort zone here for a minute. I'm not a political analyst. I think they sat there and they took calls from pollsters and they said, yeah, I'm going to vote for Hillary. And then when it came time to go to the polls, they were like, yeah, Hillary's going to win. I'm not that excited. I'm not going to go to the polls. I think now people are so damn excited to get Trump out of the White House that they're standing in line for 11 hours, as we've seen. Number of votes, even though a lot of that, I think, is attributable to coronavirus, right? That's why people are voting early. But I think the tables are so turned in this election that I am expecting to see a landslide. I'm not getting cocky. I'm not getting overconfident. I am expecting to see an absolute landslide against Donald Trump and for Joe Biden.
Well, here's the good news. I feel that incredible enthusiasm as well. And, you know, real anger toward the Trump administration. And I don't think many of those people waiting in line for, 8 hours in Georgia were waiting for Trump. And I think it becomes much more difficult for, bad actors to change election outcomes if they think the populace is going to rise up and the people at sort of in positions of influence in the media and elsewhere may not accept the result we need to have those polls be extremely in Joe Biden's favor, especially in the battleground states. We didn't verify the validity of the 2016 election. And I just want to leave enough room. I don't want us to kid ourselves that it's off the table, that they would change vote totals electronically, mostly because A, it's true. And B, it locks candidates into conceding. If everyone is out there messaging, that our system is so secure and this really couldn't happen and it probably didn't happen and it was Hillary's fault because you didn't say that. But a lot of people say, she should have visited here, or she should have done that, or they just didn't like her. It makes it really very difficult for individual candidates who lose, despite the polls saying that they should win, to contest their election outcomes. And if they don't contest them because we don't have these manual audits, we are talking about completely unverified electronic outcomes with systems that absolutely could be changed, not just by Russia and perhaps even more likely by domestic actors. It's just not hard. They are absolutely centralized via these county systems that program all the voting machines and aggregate all the precinct totals. And there are not good controls and no transparency as to who specifically has access to those systems and who's doing the programming. It's farmed out to third-party vendors here and third-party vendors there. And we just need to keep that door open so that we don't make it really, really awkward for our candidates. And we need to pressure, if they do lose, if Biden does lose, we need to not be gracious this time if the polls suggested he should have won. Or even if they just say it was close. We can't be gracious this time. Maybe I'm not saying Biden should come out and say what I'm saying, probably not. But I think that we ourselves need to be clear that
I don't know what happened.
Lost our audio.
Yeah.
Oops, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that goes for down ballot too. I am so worried.
I don't know what's going on with your audio. It's going in and out. Jennifer, what's going on, sweetheart? Nope, can't hear you anymore. Glenn, well, in the meantime, I do want to ask Jennifer about Georgia, but Glenn, why? I thought the Supreme Court already said that Donald Trump's tax returns could be released. Why is it going to them again?
Here's why. Because the first attack that Donald Trump launched against the Cy Vance subpoena for his tax returns was that I'm a king, I'm beyond the reach of the criminal justice system, and I have absolute immunity. That is the limited issue that then got litigated up through the courts until the Supreme Court said, you're not a king, you're subject to the criminal justice system like everybody else, and you can make whatever attacks against the subpoena any other mere mortal litigant could make. So unfortunately, they only decided that one limited issue, and then it went back down to the court, and he made all the standard run-of-the-mill challenges against the subpoena. But two things. First of all, I think we should all be thrilled that and comforted by the fact that Gorsuch and Kavanaugh ruled against Trump in his tax case, right? That's a sign of things to come, in my opinion, in any election challenge that makes its way up to the Supreme Court. Because the one thing I will say is, yes, the Supreme Court might muck with the ACA. They might muck with Roe v. Wade. They might muck with Obergefell, which I think is a special kind of sin if they say you can't marry who you love. The government gets to prohibit that. I don't think they will throw this election to a corrupt president, because this is a guy who's been trying to put himself beyond the reach of the Supreme Court all along. And when his own two dang appointees got their hands on a case where Donald Trump was trying to say, I'm beyond the reach of the law, they both said, no, you're not. The reason we're back down in the trial court, then the appellate court again, and now up to the Supreme Court, maybe in the tax litigation, is because once the Supreme Court ruled he's not beyond the law, then he got to go back down into the New York trial court and argue two things. Okay, if I'm not above the law, I want to make two more arguments. The subpoena is overly broad. It's not. And the subpoena was issued in bad faith. It's not. John, for 30 years, I issued subpoenas. Thousands of financial record subpoenas get issued every day by grand juries. And they are as broad as we want them to be. Trust me. So that's why the trial court laughed Trump's lawyers out of court. The appellate court, again, laughed Trump's lawyers out of court. And now he's trying one last effort to get it back up to the Supremes. And the Supremes should say, go the heck away. This is not a constitutional issue any longer. It is a vanilla, run-of-the-mill, complaint about a subpoena being too broad. The Supreme Court should absolutely not accept this case for review a second time. And we're going to know. I'm going to go out on a limb again, and I'm my own worst enemy, and I'm going to say they will not, because there is no constitutional issue to be decided. And that's the only time that, and when there's a split between two federal circuit courts and the Supreme Court's like, okay, we got to resolve this because we have to have one unified federal interpretation of the Constitution. There's no reason, absent politics, there's no reason for the Supreme Court to take a second crack at the Cy Vance subpoena case.
So I guess all that I would say is on the merits, I think you're probably right. What's so hideous about the Trump administration is that we never know exactly what we're dealing with. So we don't know if we're dealing with just the merits or if there is blackmail going on in the background, because this administration is that bad. And, there was Kavanaugh had some loan that somebody paid, and we don't know what was up with that. And with the Justice Stevens retirement, Russia hacked SmartTech, which is the company that had all of the Bush administration's emails, and you don't have George Bush endorsing Biden, which I can't believe he doesn't want to. Or at least I find it odd that he hasn't come out and endorsed Biden.
That's weird. I didn't even think about that, because everybody else seems to. Even today, RNC Chair Michael Steele came out in favor of Biden.
Yep. And there, so Russia apparently hacked emails that were kept on SmartTech server. And that was the Bush White House had like 22 million emails there. It was Karl Rove, who's now working for Trump. It was, I'm sure it was Bush himself. And I just worry that we can't analyze these things. We have to analyze them two separate ways. One on the merits, and what do we think they really want to do? I kind of agree that they probably don't. They probably don't want to see Trump in office. But I think there's a lot of strings being pulled. And even if it doesn't rise to exactly blackmail, there has been this long plot by the religious right to, take over the Supreme Court. And sort of issue in a theocracy, some version of a theocracy, and they see Trump as facilitating that and Biden is not facilitating that. And so I just don't know really what strings are being pulled. And that's not a prediction. It's just a concern.
But let me ask you, both of you guys, you're both lawyers, two lawyers and a comedian walking to a bar. But anyway, like, go ahead and I'm sure, you know, Jennifer watched this. In Georgia, like, this African-American kid tweeted a line. He says, "I've waited 11 hours, but I'm still getting my vote in." Yet in the white precincts, they get right in and out. But they make it harder for, you know, the black precincts. That can't be legal.
It's hard to show intent, but no, that there was a lawsuit filed by Marilyn Marks. I mean, she's the same one who got the touchscreens deemed unconstitutional. One thing that nobody cares about, everybody thinks it's really boring, it's not a sexy issue, is that touchscreens cause long lines. And they take, I mean, according to a Pennsylvania State Department study, the touchscreens there, these ESNS new version of touchscreens, took voters three times as long to use as hand-marked paper ballots. And so, you know, in voter suppression states, it's not really surprising that they would want equipment that they can dole out, the working equipment, and have power issues here and there, and it would create longer lines. And now it's not just limited to the touchscreen voting machines. There are electronic poll books that they're very enamored with. And that one thing that has me very worried is the largest, these are check-in computers, and they also use them to activate the voting machines. But they connect to Wi-Fi and they connect to Bluetooth, and the largest one in the country, it's in 25 or 23 states and Canada, is called Noink, and it was founded by a former Republican election official from St. Louis, and his product manager campaign is campaign for Ed Martin, who's now the president of the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, that opposes the Equal Rights Amendment. And these electronic poll books are going down right and left, and it's kind of an, they've been around for years, but the massive proliferation of them has been since 2016. Massive. So they went, they had connectivity issues throughout Los Angeles County. They've had, they were largely apparently to blame for long lines in Georgia in the primaries. And I believe also with the recent lines, I think some of them are going down, but that's just another problem that we have with so much equipment being used, is that you also can't prove intent. And the software is proprietary. So you end up having to take their word for it. It was a programming glitch. It was a this error. It was a that error. And then it becomes just very difficult to prove intent. And by the time you get it all figured out anyway, the election is over, you know.
And Don, here, on the suppressing the minority vote front, this is what gives me so much heartburn. So, you know, we all know Mitch McConnell has been cramming judges, including not qualified, which is the ABA rating, not unqualified, but it's not qualified. He's been cramming not qualified judges down America's throats now for years. And right. What I don't think people necessarily realize when they just hear about the numbers, how many judges have been crammed down our throat. There are 53 appellate court, federal appellate court judges among the circuit courts that Mitch McConnell has crammed down our throats. 53. And what's important about those judges is they are the real wielders of power when it comes to deciding cases. Because you can appoint all of the not qualified trial court judges in the federal district courts you want, and they can only do so much damage because they don't create precedent. They don't create law. They just decide the legal issue and decide the case in front of them. And it's when it goes up to the appellate courts, that's when law gets created that ends up binding the entire country across all of the federal jurisdictions. That's where the power is. He's appointed 53 of these people. Guess how many were African American?
Zero. One?
Zero.
Oh, zero.
Zero.
Oh my God.
These are the people. How's that for a representative cross-section of our great diverse country? These are the people who are going to be creating precedent, because all of those cases that get decided by that middle management of our judiciary, none of it, almost none of it statistically, is going to go up to the Supreme Court unless there's some huge constitutional issue or a split among the federal circuits. So these are the power.
So voting rights cases too.
Voting rights cases. So they are going to continue to gut voting rights. They're going to continue to affirm voter suppression every chance they get. And it's this powerful middle management of the judicial branch that we have to tackle. Of course, the way we tackle it, and it's not that hard, is by upping the number
of appellate court judges, which is entirely constitutional. It can be done by simple legislation. And the appellate court judges in all of the circuits have been yelling and screaming for more judges for years because they're overworked. It's a win-win-win, and it neutralizes the not qualified and perhaps racist Mitch McConnell appellate court judges. All of this is doable if we have the political will to do it.
But we also don't we also have to worry about the state judges that are on the ballot right now? I mean, I talked with David Pepper, who's the chair of the Ohio Democratic Party, and he's just really, really worried about state legislative races and state judges, because he said that they would be voting on the new redistricting, which is in 2021. They're going to, I don't know if it's voting, but deciding in one way or another the new maps, and those will, to a large extent, influence the control of the House of Representatives for a decade, he said. The new maps based on the new census.
Yeah, we do have to worry about the state judges as well. There's a lot to worry about.
That's why if you hear that there's a suspicious outcome on a state race, state judge race, you know, not a conspiracy theory to, I don't, or even if it is, we should challenge those, you know, unexpected, glitchy, anomalous outcomes, because yeah, we could lose out on, make it very, very difficult to control the House of Representatives going forward. We have it now. But.
Jennifer, Jillian Lehrman has a question, and thanks for the super chats. Guys, always send me super chats. The show doesn't pay for itself. But yeah. Jillian Lehrman says, Jen, I sent in my ballot in New York City. Am I counted?
I hope so. If New York City has ballot tracking, you should take advantage of it. You can check your, I would just, easiest just to call your county election office and ask if there's a way to track your ballot. And if there is, track it and see if it's been received. So, you know, that the part of the problem with vote by mail is, I mean, there are lots of potential obstacles to even getting it into the scanners, you know, the signature match and all of that. I don't know what the percentages are in New York. I was actually, maybe wrongly, but I was more worried initially just about that hundreds of thousands, and I was thinking millions of voters were not going to receive their vote by mail ballots on time. I actually suspect that's still the case. And that was sort of my initial, like, oh my God, we're all going to do vote by mail, but what if people just don't get them on time? And that was even before the post office, you know, crashed or was gutted.
Jennifer, is that like people with the mail-in ballots, if their signature is from 15 years ago or 20 years ago, and because mine has changed and morphed into a million different ways, I mean, you know, then they don't count that vote. I mean, that's why I'm going in person.
It's very concerning. Apparently, if you're in I think they call them the motor voter states, where you're registered through the DMV, at least that's how I did it in California, as long as your signature matches your driver's license, that's an easy way to check. If you have to actually go into the election office and check, which you can do, it's kind of a hassle, and especially in the middle of a pandemic. But yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I vote by mail. I'm also in California, though. I'm not in a swing state. And ideally, I think the best method, honestly, putting aside COVID, it's just for security, would be hand-marked paper ballots in person on election day, because then you have the hand-marked paper ballot record of voter intent, and you don't have to worry about whether you know right on the spot whether it got into the machine, and you can make a ruckus if for some reason they're challenging you. You know what's going on, and you're right there to fix it. But, you know, with the pandemic, I certainly understand why there was such a big push for vote by mail. I don't know. And there are, and unfortunately, some in-person voting, there are these touch screens and electronic poll books in some places, which I don't recommend. I would actually prefer vote by mail to those. It's a balancing of risks. Nothing's perfect. You just mitigate the risks to the extent you can. So,
Jennifer, and Glenn, I mean, did your jaw drop seeing the California GOP out here set up illegal ballot boxes?
They never cease to amaze.
I mean,
and then they just have no, it doesn't matter. It's like, maybe it will eventually, but they have no shame. They were like, yeah, we did it. So what? No, we're not going to take them down. So what? That was the last I saw from heard of it.
Two words, Bill Barr. You know, everybody asks all day long, can they get away with that? Isn't that illegal? Why isn't anything being done about it? Two words, Bill Barr. At least on the federal level.
I was shocked by that. And I thought I was done being shocked. It's just so brazen. And they're everywhere. That's the thing. It's not just Trump. You know, it's not even just the Republicans. And they're everywhere putting fake ballot boxes up. And what were they planning to do with those ballots? I mean, I think I read they were outside a gun store. So maybe they weren't planning, if they'd been in a Democratic area, it would have been even more suspicious, I guess. But I know Democrats buy guns too, but not as many.
Gun stores, churches, they put them in all where you would expect a Republican to go. But, you know, like, so if any Democrat ballots went in there, who knows if they would even
submit. That was my initial thought is, oh, my God, they put fake ballot boxes in to get the Democratic ballots and throw them out. But then when I heard they were outside a gun store, I thought, okay, well, I guess they're just trying to facilitate their own voting. But it's, you know, hypocritical, and they don't give a crap that they're hypocritical. They don't care.
I know, and that's what's so sad. But now, do either one of you guys know, because I keep seeing this, that Ivanka Trump has patents in voting machines?
Oh, my God, I'm so glad you asked. I have repeated this phrase so many times on Twitter. There is no credible source claiming that her machines have been made, much less sold anywhere, much less in the United States. And yes, we almost certainly would know if they had been in the United States. She got a trademark. She did not get a patent. And it is, you know, when I first saw it too, I think it was Crew that found that information. And yeah, it struck me as odd. But and maybe Glenn would know this better than I would. But I mean, apparently you can get a trademark just for defensive purposes so that somebody else doesn't get the trademark. Although it's still weird she would get them for voting machines. But I do not. It's maybe ominous for the future, but not, by which I don't mean November. I mean further out. I don't believe that there has been that there are any Ivanka voting machines anywhere. I think that would have leaked out. Most are, you know, there's certification processes that suck, but at least the machines makers are generally identified, if nothing else. I mean, you don't know who's behind them, like if Ivanka is a shareholder or something, but you at least know that it's, you know, terrible ESNS or terrible Dominion voting or, you know, shitty heart, whatever it is, you know where they came from. So if it was Ivanka, that would have gotten out.
Yeah, that's because there's so much crap in the news, Glenn. I'm sure you know it too. Like, it's hard to know what is true and what isn't anymore. I mean, it just
seems almost think it's an op. I mean, every time I post something about malfunctioning machines, people ask me if it's Ivanka, and it happens with such frequency that it almost seems like there's bots out there asking this question every day. Well, but I know you're not a bot, John, and so
no.
When you say, John, there's so much in the news. I mean, look at, we were talking about the Hunter Biden laptop story. I mean, not only do we have, you know, crazy Rudy Giuliani running around saying this laptop smells like Hunter Biden, but we have government officials who then prop up the story, whether it's Ratcliffe, the appropriately named Ratcliffe, or, you know, who really irritates me because he lied about being a terrorism prosecutor. And a 30-year prosecutor takes that really personally when somebody lies about being a terrorism prosecutor. But there he is the DNI. But then you have Lindsey Graham, for gosh sakes, John. Behind the Hunter Biden laptop story, he wants to subpoena the head of Twitter and the head of Facebook to get to the bottom of why they refuse to deceive the American people by carrying the false Hunter Biden laptop story. So how are we left to figure out what's real, what's fake, what's Russian propaganda, what's disinformation, what's just bad reporting? There's no good filter through which to put this stuff anymore, whether it's Ivanka, you know, trademarks on voting machines or Hunter Biden laptops, because government officials like Mike Pompeo and Ratcliffe and other, and Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, are willing to prop up the falsities that they think will win them votes or win them points.
Exactly. And they're not just willing, they're doing it deliberately. And I think they're doing it in a coordinated fashion too, with talking points and stuff. I mean, we are really Russia light as far as propaganda. I think that this has been their playbook. Flooding the zone with shit was what Steve Bannon called it. And I mean, you know, he said that once in an interview celebrating his own hideousness, and they call it the fire hose of falsehoods, I guess. And, you know, that's sort of the other phrase for it. And that's what they're doing. Because, and the idea is, and then the idea, ultimate goal is to show that everybody's equally bad, to create that impression, and that you don't know what's real and what isn't. And so therefore you might as well vote for Trump.
And inside,
because everybody sucks. Everybody's equally bad. And it's just not true, but that's the goal of it.
But inside chaos, corruption thrives. And that's why Trump continues to try to create as much chaos as he can, because then he gets to grift and scam and skim and be corrupt amidst the chaos.
And, Glenn, Daphne Perel from Belgium has a question for you. John, could you ask Glenn, when does all this scheming become treason?
You know, none of it probably technically qualifies as treason. And here's the thing. Every time we see a potential Trump crime, we ask ourselves, oh, my God, can he be prosecuted for that? I no longer care about how many different things we can prosecute Trump for, because just as when I had a defendant who maybe had four or five or six bodies to his credit had killed that many people. And unfortunately, what I learned as a homicide prosecutor is that once somebody pulls a trigger, once the inhibition, that sort of wall of inhibition comes down, and they kill over and over and over again. So I had a lot of defendants with multiple bodies to their credit. I didn't care so much. I don't want to be callous, because every victim and every victim's family needed to have their day in court. But my goal was, I want to go against the strongest. I want to bring the strongest charge first, because in Washington, D.C., it would carry penalty of a mandatory minimum 30 years in prison if you convict somebody of first degree premeditated murder. So, and then we'll worry about all of the other crimes thereafter, because you can only confine a person for but one life, right? Donald Trump has committed so many crimes, you know, even starting before his campaign finance violation and conspiracy to violate campaign finance laws with Michael Cohen, that I could prove in my sleep into a jury. Give me 30 minutes, right? The co-defendant already pled guilty and accepted responsibility for that crime. Obviously, before that, he's committed all kinds of financial fraud, bank fraud, insurance fraud, tax fraud, all of which is being investigated by D.A. Vance. But then, I mean, he committed, you know, 10 counts of felony obstruction of justice. He committed counts of witness tampering. He's obstructed congressional inquiries, for gosh sakes, by standing up and saying all of my executive branch officials will wrongfully, criminally, ultimately, refuse to comply with lawfully issued congressional subpoenas. He's committed false statements in his written answers to Bob Mueller. He has committed tens of thousands of counts of either involuntary manslaughter or negligent homicide, depending on the jurisdiction you're in, for the way he handled the COVID crisis. There are so many crimes that, you know what, let's not worry about treason, which requires us, you know, being involved in war at the time, you know, and let's just bring the strongest charges beginning in January, begin presenting that evidence to the grand jury, so the grand jury, sitting as the conscience of the community, can start to make some decisions about what indictments to bring. And let's not worry about the reach crimes. Let's just saw the criminal wood in front of us, because all of that will result in a life sentence.
It is just amazing. I mean, he's going to jail. This is my biggest concern. And Jennifer, this is, I guess, yours as well, is that he knows that he's going to go to jail. His family's probably going to go to jail. So he wants to stay, you know, as president as long as he freaking can. That's why I think he must be on the phone with Putin. He's trying his damnedest to
rig. They don't need Putin, though. That's what's so scary. You know, I've gone back and forth on, I have my suspicions about the 2016 election. I do not know whether vote tallies were changed or not. I kind of lean one way or the other. It changes over time, the more I read about it. But I mean, we really can't forget or underestimate the threat of potential domestic hacking. And one of the things that really reminds me of that, I interviewed Don Siegelman. Well, I've interviewed him several times, actually, but initially several months ago, who is the former Democratic governor in Alabama. He's actually Alabama's last Democratic governor. And Karl Rove kind of got his feet wet to a large extent in Alabama, filling up the courts, this Alabama Supreme Court, with, you know, Republican operatives and probably unqualified. And on his, Don Siegelman had been governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and attorney general. And he was considered perhaps the most popular politician in Alabama of all time. He was predicted to win his reelection. And he ran against a guy whose campaign manager was Karl Rove's buddy. And Karl Rove was all over the election like white on rice. And on election night, Siegelman was declared victorious. And in this one Republican county, one precinct, the totals changed after they sent everybody home from the courthouse. They would post the totals outside the courthouse, and 6,000 votes were removed from Siegelman's total in this Republican county. And then, but it was one precinct, so it would not have been hard to recount. They actually had paper ballots, hand-marked paper ballots. But Karl Rove's client was also the Alabama AG, and they seized the paper ballots that night or the very next morning before and certified the result prematurely and illegally. And the courts were all loaded up with Karl Rove's people. And then they came up with ginned up charges against Don Siegelman and prevent him from running again and sent him to prison on a really dramatically expanded non-existent crime. And, you know, we just cannot, he just says anybody would be naive to think that they wouldn't. I mean, he just says his race was stolen. It's actually quite refreshing. He's the only, but I mean, he's been in prison. He got locked up by these nuts. He's the only Democrat, I think, who is suspicious their race was stolen, who actually will just say it. I mean, apparently Max Cleland was quite suspicious. John Kerry has said 15 years after the fact that they were suspicious about 2004, but nobody wants to say it at the time. And, you know, Karl Rove said there was a Republican whistleblower who said that Karl Rove told her that you could change an election outcome, rig an election outcome, as long as the polls were within 3 to 4 percentage points. We need to make sure we are well beyond.
Yes.
And that's where the disinformation is really. I mean, that's why I don't think the Republicans do one thing either, and neither can we. We certainly don't want to rig totals, but it does matter challenging all of the court of public opinion matters, because we need the court of public opinion to agree that something is wrong if it doesn't go the way that it appears it should go.
Well, you know what concerns me? Did either of you guys ever see the documentary Outfoxed?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you see it, Glenn?
No, I didn't.
This is what I'm really afraid of, too, is that what happened in the Bush-Gore election is that someone in Florida, a reporter for Fox News, was like Bush's cousin or whatever it was. He declared Bush the winner in Florida way before the polls had closed. And then the other networks picked up on that story. And what I'm so afraid of is that NBC, CBS, you know, ABC, Fox, Trump is going to say that he won.
You can practically hear the music playing, whatever that election night music is.
Yeah. And then he's going to say that he won. And the other networks are now going to follow the same dumb lead and report on that. And then people aren't going to go to the polls because they think it's over.
But you know what? There was more to that story, though, too, is there actually was an electronic mishap. There was a memory card that subtracted 16,000 votes from Gore's total in Volusia County, Florida. And this was written up in the New York Times in 2018 by Kim Zetter. And the logs showed that there was a second memory card, which there should never be. And that when the second memory card was inserted, that these 16,000 votes were deleted, apparently. And so it was that second card has never been retrieved. There are internal memos from the vendor, you know, referencing it. And it's just kind of this, but yeah, so there are a lot of layers to that. And yeah, I mean, you could also just change reported totals. So, you know, it'd be the kind of thing that would be discovered later, but the online reporting systems are online. And so you could just change what the reported totals are. In fact, that's what Russia tried to do in Ukraine. Did it actually do it? I don't know. They tried to do it in Ukraine with their reporting system. They were caught. But then Russia actually even announced the wrong winner in the election. I think this was in 2018. And it wasn't even really believable, though. Nobody would have believed it. It should have been a landslide the other direction. But yeah, you could do that kind of thing. And then all of Trump's supporters will think there's something fishy.
And that's what I'm afraid of, because then he's going to declare a victory. And then, you know, even though all the votes haven't been counted, and then after, like, on November 5th, it'll be proven that Biden won. But then it'll go to the Supreme Court. And that's what scares the crap out of me. Because if it goes to the Supreme Court, then Amy Coney Barrett, and, you know, they have the majority. Are they going to just say Trump won?
Well, that's where Glenn thinks maybe not, right? And I hope you're right.
And I also think, and maybe
unless there's compromise.
I think Amy Coney Barrett, if I was minimally comforted by anything she said, and I really think comfort is an overstatement, you know, when she talked about the recusal issue, right? Because Donald Trump said, I'm installing her, I'm going to paraphrase now, so she will corruptly throw me the election. Here's the thing.
The legitimacy of the Supreme Court will hang in the balance in a big way and perhaps an irreparable way. The law of recusing yourself from a case, right, for a conflict, says that if you have an actual conflict, I don't think she does, but if you have an appearance of conflict that cannot be overcome, you must recuse yourself. Now, let's set aside that the rules for the Supremes are a little flexible. But the process is, first, she has to review all of the case law, all of the precedent and the history around recusal. Then she has to consult with the other eight justices to decide whether she has to recuse herself. I believe, Robert, I believe all of the justices will say, because Donald Trump told the American people he was putting you on the court so you could corruptly throw the election his way, you must recuse if we are to preserve the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. If I had to bet $1 of my own money, that's always my max limit because I'm not a gambler. I would bet $1. First of all, I don't think an election challenge will make its way up to the Supreme Court. But if it does, I believe Amy Coney Barrett will recuse. She might not be happy about it, but I believe Roberts and the others will say, a decision in which you participate that throws the election to Donald Trump will never be accepted as legitimate by the citizens of the United States of America. Therefore, the legitimacy of the Supreme Court will be at an end, and you must remove yourself from this decision. I don't think we're going to get there, but I think that's the way it could play out.
And I do want to say, I hope you're right, and you might very well be right. On the other hand, I mean, we do have Justice Roberts and Kavanaugh and isn't there? Oh, and Amy Coney Barrett. They all worked on the. They all helped with the. You know, Bush stopped the 2000 recount. So,
but that was a different kind of challenge. I mean, right now we know we have an overtly criminal president who has done nothing but crime, grift, steal, and kill.
It's order of magnitude, perhaps, but we entered an illegal war. But that was before. That was later. So I guess that was after. I don't know. There was the card in Volusia County. I don't know. I hope you're right. I think they're pretty corrupt. But I do think that Justice Roberts I haven't studied his personality either, but I would just guess someone who walked around in a robe all this time that he probably enjoys his reputation as being a, you know, legitimate scholar in justice and wouldn't want to just throw that down the toilet.
He did something with the ACA that, frankly, I think most legal scholars, you know, disagree with. And he did it because he wanted to preserve the integrity of the institution.
He cares about his reputation, which is good. I don't know if Kavanaugh, I drink beer or I like beer, cares as much about his reputation, but unfortunately.
I really hope that when Biden and Kamala Harris come into power, they do what I think has to be done, which is only the just thing, which is that you let the FBI run a legitimate investigation into Kavanaugh's perjury. You then charge him, you impeach him, and you remove him. Again, that's an easy call based on the evidence. Now, the politics of it is perhaps a more difficult call, but based on the evidence, that's an easy call.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. That's what they should do.
Wait, could you school me about that? I know he lied, but which... Yeah.
Which lie?
Yeah.
Let's go to the easy and obvious one. Sweater kid from Jersey, and John, you'll probably relate to this. So one of the main issues involved the Christine Blasey Ford allegation, right?
Yep.
He was testifying about issues that were material to that, information that was relevant to that, because materiality is an element of a false statement. But setting the legal weeds aside for a minute, he said things like, the Devil's Triangle, what's that? It's a drinking game. No, it's not.
Why?
He said, I signed my letters, and this is going to be right up your alley, John. I signed my letters F-F-F-F-F because one of our friends stuttered. No, he didn't. You know what that means? I looked it up in the Urban Dictionary and talked to others who actually know what it means. It's five F words that are misogynistic. Find them,
feel them,
something else, do something else, F, and the last one is forget them.
Yep, I know that.
So these are transparent lies. We all saw it in real time.
And boofing.
Yeah, lies, 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 lies. You don't just turn the other cheek. You don't let you know, felony false statements, which carry a 5-year offense per lie. You don't let bygones be bygones. You hold a judge, soon to be justice at that point, accountable for the lies he told. That's only the right thing to do. That's not victor's justice. It's not revenge. It is actual justice and law enforcement. And that's what the American people deserve. So that's why all of these political criminals and their family members have to be made to account beginning in January.
I agree with one little observation. I hope they need to get to the bottom of that $200,000 loan, because I do think sometimes we have made a mistake, or our Justice Department has made a mistake, of going after the least offense. And I do think even our impeachment inquiry, it's not that the Ukraine, extortion of Ukraine's government for dirt on Biden wasn't a big deal. It was. But I mean, he's done worse, frankly. I mean, honestly, baby, the deliberate family separations should have been Article 1. And there must be something where they felt it was too fuzzy somehow with what Obama did. I mean, that's all I can figure, that they didn't consider that an impeachable offense. Clearly the level of the degrees are not the same by any means. There was no deliberate policy, punitive policy under Obama to punish families by yanking kids, whereas there was under Trump. But they must have just felt it wouldn't, you know, Fox News would run with it. But that it's sometimes going for the least offense can backfire, because it makes it seem like they're not as bad as they were. So, you know, saying FFFF when you're in college, you know, how many parents have college age boys who, you know, might say, write something similar down to
lying about it as a future Supreme Court justice is a whole different thing. And I, you know, the yeah. offenses, I would say we have to go with some of the most readily provable offenses. And I agree, we've got to get to the bottom of the loans. I hate to say that you could actually come up with policy justifications for when somebody comes to the country illegally with a child, for separating those. You know, there are policy justifications. I disagree with it. I think it's evil. I mean, Stephen Kids in Cages Miller, I think, needs to be held to account. But, you know, the other thing that I think
you could say there's a policy justification for shoving Jews into ovens as well, but it's still an international criminal court crime. This was a crime against humanity. It just was.
It was. But the thing is, I want to go with the most readily provable crimes that are beyond dispute, because I want them to be made.
FFFF is just not. I mean, yeah. All right, fine. I mean, I just, the 200, they need to find more dirt than that. But for example, so like one part of the reason where I'm coming from is that the Obama administration, one thing they really, really did blow it was on accountability. And they, you know, they should have, sorry, I get worked up. I do this all the time, don't I, John? Never mind. But they subpoenaed Karl Rove. And when he refused to respond to the subpoena, they just agreed to have him testify, not testify, chit-chat off the record behind closed doors. With, and they did not pursue any of the crimes, I don't think, of the Bush administration. Even when they found all the documents, they didn't.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's your pose.
Go through them. Uh-oh.
Something's going on with you, Jennifer. Your coughing is now turned into a freeze frame.
Let me take that.
Hold on. Let me add you again. And are you in now? Oh, she's gone. Glenn, but yeah, you know, first of all, the pyramid thing is the most incriminating, because you know what the Urban Dictionary describes as what pyramid is, right?
Tell me.
Two guys having sex with one girl. And if the guys make eye contact, it's a foul. That's what a pyramid is, which would have been incriminating for him, because he's been accused of him and his buddies, you know, attempting to rape this woman. And that's more than one man. So the pyramid thing was totally incriminating to this. I mean, he's lying because he knows it would incriminate him.
It was lie after lie after lie. And I understand some of them were juvenile lies, but they all add up. And, you know, and the point is, if the FBI, I believe, and I, you know, listen, I am still a big fan and big supporter of the FBI. I work RICO cases with them shoulder to shoulder. And I can tell you, yes, there may be a few bad apples, and Michael Horowitz may have found them, you know, the FBI attorney who actually changed an email and then put it in the stream that ended up in a FISA application. That is criminal, and that needs to be like run out of the FBI on a rail, and it has been. But 99% of the FBI agents are good, hardworking, honest, ethical public servants. And what we need to do is just let them do their job, which involves doing an investigation of the confirmation hearing of all of these Mitch McConnell judges, particularly the not qualified ones. And guess what? If there is no perjury in the testimony, then they're in the clear. And they're crazy right-wing ideologues, but we probably can't remove them from the bench. But if they lied, big lie, small lie, I don't care. It's all going to add up, and they need to be held accountable. They need to be charged. They need to be impeached. They need to be removed from the bench. I mean, that's just the way the country's supposed to work.
It is. But I guess what I was trying to say with Obama is it's not even just about, it's about getting to the bottom of the rot of what happened and digging it out, whether it ends up being, you know, when you go just for the smallest offense that you're sure you can get a conviction on and just don't even investigate and publish your findings as to the real more significant things, even if you can't prove them beyond a reasonable doubt, it's more likely than not, or substantially more likely than not. I mean, in order to dig out the rot that we're in, we need to know, for example, where the $200,000 loan came from. We need to know why Justice Stevens abruptly resigned. You know, we still need to know why what went on with Karl Rove and the firing of those U.S. attorneys who didn't want to prosecute voter fraud, and the disappearance of the 20 million Bush emails. I mean, maybe we don't want to go with emails particularly, but we need to dig down deep and figure out what the hell happened. How exactly did we land here? Because it wasn't just FFF on, I mean, you know that, but we need to get the rot out is all I'm trying to say. In addition to getting convictions. You may be right. I'm sure you are right on the actual convictions. You want to go with the sure thing, but that doesn't mean we don't need to still investigate.
Yeah, I'd like to investigate it all and get to the bottom of it all. But most importantly, and I shouldn't say most importantly, because you're right. If we don't dig it all out, we're never going to be able to grow a reliable garden again, not to sound like Charles Gardner of being there. But but I think we have to get these nefarious actors that Mitch McConnell out. Has in place out. And, you know, we have another project, you know, the Citizens Brigade of Court Watchers, where, you know, we're going to go into all of the federal district courts. We're going to watch Mitch McConnell's cruddy judges engage in judicial misconduct. And then all you do is go to uscourts.gov and you file a complaint. Easy peasy. Right. There were 83 complaints against Brett Kavanaugh at the time he was elevated, and they all disappeared like miracles, because unfortunately, that's the process. There are so many things that we, the people, can do. And we can't just rely on our government officials to take the bull by the horns and actually address these issues that we're going to have to do, especially with respect to the judges, because frankly, that is perhaps the single greatest danger. All those judges with life tenure, all 53 of them, who are going to be creating law, albeit case law, precedent that could destroy fairness and equality and voting rights and everything else that we now enjoy, marriage equality, could destroy it all if we don't grab hold of it and do something about it.
Yeah, and let me ask you both the question, which I know is it'll probably never happen, but is there any chance we're ever going to get rid of this archaic electoral college?
Jenny?
I don't know. I'll punt that one to you. I have no idea. I haven't researched it at all.
Unlikely. Yes, it seems like its time has passed, but I think it's unlikely we get rid of it.
I mean, it seems like so, you know, convoluted. But and how about I wanted to ask you something else about this. Gerrymandering. Like, you know,
that's the state races. That's the state lawmakers. That's David Pepper. I mean, he has been sounding the alarm. He actually wrote a series of books that are thrillers. That's how I came to know him, because they are ostensibly about election security and they are technically fiction, but they're based on real vulnerabilities. He clearly researched his stuff and how, coincidentally, his first one came out, The People's House, in 2016, and it was about how Russia could take over, gerrymander everything, but by stealing a bunch of House races. I believe that's the way it went. Maybe it wasn't gerrymandering, but they stole a bunch of House races, and based on electronic vulnerabilities that couldn't be detected, and even though in this fictional world they actually did manual audits, the audits couldn't discover anything because the paper was the crappy, unreliable paper that I've been talking about. And so anyway, he's incredibly worried about gerrymandering and that we need to really focus on these down ballot state lawmakers and judicial races this year, because they're going to vote next year.
Yeah. And you know, what about Citizens United? Is there anything that can be done about that? I mean, it just seems like these are all things that are in favor of the GOP, because the GOP, I mean, look, there are more people of color in this country, more women, the youth. I mean, the GOP is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, but they're using everything they can to win, because they can't, because a majority of Americans are going, you know, a Democrat. No.
Well, we need to have verifiable elections, because if we can, so that we know for sure whether our strategies are working and when they're not working, so that we can make corrections. When you kind of have a system that's not verifiable, you don't really know why you lost your races. So it would be helpful to have clarity there, because absolutely, especially with the demographic shift and even cultural shift in the country toward, I do think that legislatively, if we get enough Democrats in office, we can legislatively correct a lot of this stuff. But we have to make sure that we can win those races. And to make sure that we can win those races, we need to have verifiable elections, which means, unfortunately, if we're going to use computers, I would rather get rid of them. But assuming we're going to keep using computers, we have to have these robust manual audits, transparent chains of custody, and actually meaningful, reliable paper records. It can't be machine marked crap from touchscreens. So then I think, yeah, I think we can correct a lot of things, but we just need to know what we're dealing with.
Yeah, it is just so freaking scary. And, you know, Glenn, I watched Ari, somebody on MSNBC.
Berman?
What's that?
Ari Berman? Oh, yeah. No. Ari, was he voter suppression?
No, he was talking about how.
Oh, Ari Melber, then. It was
like, no, it was all about all the cons that Don has done from Trump University, and like everything that he said that he was going to do, how he supports coal. He hasn't done a damn thing for the coal industry. I mean, everything that he said he was going to do, he hasn't done. I can't imagine why anybody would vote for these. I mean,
because he hates. He hates the way they hate. And some people have a big hole. Yeah, they have a big hole in their lives. And that's why I don't call people maggots or deplorables or irredeemables. There are people out there who have great big holes in their lives, right? They're not doing well. And the only thing some of them can find to fill it is hate. And Donald Trump gives them that hate. He gives them somebody else to look down on, because they could be out of work. They could, you know, have family struggles. They could have addiction challenges. But you know what? Donald Trump says, this person over here, this minority, is below me, is beneath me. And that makes me feel like at least I'm better than somebody. Donald Trump knows as a con man that he can give people that sort of lowest common denominator of hate to fill them up. And that's why they stick with him, I believe. What we have to try to do, Pollyanna, though it may sound, is reach out to everybody like Biden wants to do and try to give them something other than hate to fill them up. Try to give them actual opportunity. I would think most people would kind of want health care for themselves and their family, their kids. I would think they'd kind of want affordable college for their kids. There are things we can do to reach out to people who have nothing but Donald Trump's hate to fill them up. That's why they stick with him.
Yeah, I guess so. Go ahead, Jen. Oh, Jennifer, we can't hear you again.
I'm sorry. So he's also just really effective at propaganda. And I think I had really hoped that some of the mainstream, you know, news commentators on TV would have on experts about propaganda and how to counter it. Because I think in addition to peddling and hate, which is a huge, huge part of it, I agree. He also, though, he made it like a club. I mean, he's like a mascot. You know, they have teddy bears with the, you know, they have teddy bears with this, yellow toupee-looking thing on top. And, you know, they have their hats and they have their apparel and they go to these rallies. It's almost like they're, like a Grateful Dead concert for them. It's their way of life now. He's made it their way of life. And that has to be unhooked somehow. And, you know, we don't have that with Biden. And I don't think it's even healthy. I'm not saying that we should have that with Biden, but we have to find a way to unhook that somehow, that, you know, because he made it their identity. He incorporated it kind of into their person, the way they view themselves. And it's very hard to undo that. But I'm sure there are ways, but we need experts on propaganda and cultism and such to undo that.
All right, so let me ask you both. I mean, I'll get your opinions on this, and then I'll, I'll let you go because. And first, I do want to say thanks to both of you. I know, because it's, I love hearing from you. I love having you on. I mean, so and you're always welcome. And I thank you both so much. So what states are we going to take as far as in the Senate? So are we going to take South Carolina?
Jamie Harrison, I'm going to come at it. If you take the election security part out of it, yeah, I'd say I'll just take that off for now. Assuming there's no rigging of vote totals, yes, I think we would take South Carolina. And I think we would take Georgia too. I mean, Georgia has two very competitive races on the ballot. And again, those people are not lining up for 8 hours to vote Republican.
No.
But I worry about cheating, so I don't know.
Well, let's pretend there's no cheating because
then yes.
How about now? Here's the big one.
Then it's all roses. And if it's not, there's always hope because you just fix it the next time. You know, we're dealing with a
how about playing field. Finalists? Because Amy McGrath seems to be leading in the polls in Kentucky. Is there any? Please let there be a God. Is there any way Amy McGrath could take Mitch McConnell?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I would hope so. But if we can flip the Senate, Mitch McConnell becomes less important. But I mean, the man I don't think people are evil. I've gone after so many serial killers in my life, John, and frankly, not that many of them are evil. One thing I've always said about all of the hundreds, literally, of murderers that I've had cases against, most of them are challenged people with guns. A lot of them are impulsive kids with guns, and they don't have impulse control, and they pull triggers over the slightest provocation, right? You stole my dime rock or you bumped into my girlfriend. There's not a lot of evil that I've come across in my 30 years as a prosecutor. There's some. And Mitch McConnell seems kind of evil. Any one man who can thwart the will of the American people, who can take duly passed legislation from the House and say, as one man, I'm going to deprive the American people of even having these bills considered, which I think it should have been challenged in court, just like we should have put Gorsuch on the bench. Obama should have said, you have waived your right to advice, to advice and consent. You flat out waived it and then put him on the bench. You know what the next thing Mitch McConnell would have had to have done? He would have had to have gone into court and proved the judge's satisfaction that he has the right to change the Constitution, the advice and consent clause, and he would have lost. But we didn't
we should have done that. Why did he do that?
They should have done it. There was
why didn't they do it?
People were like, well, Hillary will just appoint him the next day. No, you don't.
Oh, God.
You don't feed the mob.
I hadn't heard that analysis before.
It's a hard thing. Even if there's a risk that you're going to lose, you don't feed the monster. But we've been feeding the Republican monster for so damn long that this is where we are. So I don't know why I got off on that rant. But so
that is just a very depressing piece of information.
Yeah, we should have taken Mitch McConnell to task. I am pulling for Amy McGrath.
Yeah, I am too. And I just, I actually haven't studied the race. I mean, objectively, I don't think most people are complete morons. So yeah, objectively, she should be able to win this race. I just hear random comments from people, that say, no, it's just not going to happen. So I don't know. But that is so not a scientific or studied analysis. I have no idea. What do you think?
I think that Mitch McConnell just might lose because Amy McGrath has way more campaign cash coming in to her campaign. She's ex-military, which is very, very strong, especially in Kentucky. I think she has a chance because Mitch
McConnell, she definitely has a chance.
Yeah, I think she might do it. And Mark Kelly in Arizona is going to win.
He's great. That's Gabby Giffords. I mean, he's more than Gaffy Giffords' husband, the astronaut.
Yep. And I think Sarah Gideon's going to beat Collins in Maine. I think that's a definite. And, who else is there? There's another state that's really looks.
Well, Georgia is the only one with two seats on the ballot this time. And they are both considered toss-ups, at least as of the last article I saw. That's a really, really important one.
Yeah. But have you guys voted already?
Yeah. I voted in person here in Virginia about a week ago.
And the story that I told is, first of all, it was almost like a carnival atmosphere, very lighthearted, very well attended. And I voted a couple of weeks after in-person voting started, but it was still a steady stream of people. And here's my favorite story, apropos of nothing. The person handing out the sample Republican ballot and the person handing out the sample Democrat ballot were standing right next to each other. One was a man, one was a woman. I don't remember which was which. And I took one of these. I said, thank you very much. And these two people chatting like they were old friends, which is like, okay, there's a little mini glimmer of hope. If people from different parties can actually begin to talk again, begin to, you know, be civil with one another again, you know, that's a good start. And that's, you know, a representative sample of one.
Yeah, I'm going to say my computer's about to die, but I do think, you know, Biden was not my first choice or second or probably not my third, but I do think he is has a unique ability possibly to heal some wounds. And that gives me some hope as well. And by the way, there are some election transparency projects. I'm not saying election security is hopeless by any means either. ProtectOurVotes.com. We've got one where we're going to compare precinct results to reported totals to look and make sure there aren't any discrepancies. They should match. So we're going to verify to the extent we can without the help of lawmakers and election officials.
Well,
there are a bunch of other projects too. I'll post them at the top of my Twitter at Jenny Cohn One. There are a number of other.
One last question, Jen, before you go.
Yeah.
Can we vote early here in California, or do I have to wait for November 3rd?
You can vote early, at least with your mail ballot. You know, sadly, I don't really study California. I just vote by mail in California. I've been so focused on the swing states that you know, I'm sure they probably have early voting in LA County and stuff. I just don't know if it's all over the state. So I don't know.
If my mom is voting October 24th in New York. So I was just curious if you knew in California.
I will tell you, just go to your county election website and it will tell you. But yeah, I'm not even sure actually that Los Angeles County does have it. I'm sorry. I should know that. Next time, I'm going to study up on California law.
All right, well, let me ask you.
I'm voting by mail, and I'm going to deliver it to a Dropbox.
One last question, if I don't talk to you before the election. Where are you going to be watching the election results, and are you going to be at a party, or, you know, what are you guys going to be doing?
I don't know. I've got some, you know, local neighborhood friends, ladies who we've been on like a little chat about the election. So maybe I'll watch with them, but you know, there's also social distancing. I don't know. I mean, I'll probably have my laptop open is all I can say for sure to watch the returns and watch the county results as they come in. And hopefully we'll have people screenshotting results too, to make sure at the county websites to make sure none go backwards. We'll be doing stuff like that.
This is going to be like the Super Bowl for me. I'm going to have my buffalo wings, my beer, my pizza, and just watch this thing and just pray that everything works out the way I expect it to.
I'm with you, John. I'm going to have my nectar of the gods, Pabst Blue Ribbon. My wife will have her wine, and we'll have a pizza, and we're just going to sit on the couch all night and watch the returns roll in.
Yeah, I guess there will definitely be drinks and pizza for me as well. I just don't know if I'll be by myself on my thing or if I'll be, you know, at a party. Uh-oh.
All right, guys. Well, listen, well, there goes Jennifer. Thank you, Jennifer Cohn. You can follow her on Twitter at JennyCohn1. And Glenn, is there anything that you want to promote?
I'm on Twitter all day and night answering people's questions. Glenn Kirshner, too. My YouTube channel, I post a video a day about the crime du jour by Trump or Bill Barr or Mike Pompeo. Also just under my name, Glenn Kirshner. And then I'm on Patreon. So if you want to come and support the efforts, this is an all-volunteer, all-family effort by us. You can go to patreon.com. Become a member of Team Justice. I do a 2-hour Zoom chat every Sunday night with lots and lots of people where I try to answer all their legal questions. So would love to have people come over to patreon.com.
Oh, Glenn, just before you go, Good as Gold says, can you ask Glenn to explain his tweet earlier about the judge's comment?
Judge So, you know, we talked about the subpoena case in New York, John, which is they're trying to get it back up to the Supreme Court. If you'll remember, Congress also subpoenaed Mazars for tax information and for financial records. And that one got sent back to the D.C. courts the way the other one got sent back to the New York courts. Well, today was the appellate court argument in that one, the congressional subpoena case. And this really
poor judge, Naomi Rao, who was appointed by Donald Trump, was questioning Doug Letter, who is the general counsel for the House of Representatives. He's a terrific appellate advocate. And she called the House of Representatives. She said, well, you're a co-equal half branch of government. And I'm thinking, what in the world is she talking about? Congress is a co-equal, the legislature is a co-equal branch of government. She thought, I guess she was being cute because the House is half and the Senate is half. But you know what? Congress is a co-equal branch of government. She made a demeaning sort of, you know, a snide, snarky comment, which caused me to say, well, then I guess, Judge Rao, because you're an appellate judge, you're only one third of a co-equal branch of government, because there's the trial court judges, the appellate court judges, and then the Supreme Court. All three together would be a co-equal branch of government. It's a smart alecky lawyer point that I made, but she's so dismissive and so superior, and she has no right to be superior. And it was so demeaning of the House of Representatives, of the appellate courts, of the process, of the people, that it kind of lit me up a little bit.
Hey, Glenn, I just see Lady Cosmic Rose. What did she say? She said, love you, Glenn. Watch you daily. And on the Stephanie Miller Show. When did you start doing Stephanie Miller?
Dude, I've been doing Stephanie Miller for a long time. Not that way. That sounded bad. and sorry, I usually don't go blue, John. So, and she had Mountain Mike put together a jingle for me, the Glenn Kirshner jingle. So I'm like, I made it. I have my own jingle.
Hold on, Glenn, I was executive producer of that show like 3 years ago, and I don't remember you
doing it for the last probably year or 18 months.
Well, okay.
I love Stephanie Miller. I love Stephanie Miller.
Yeah. No, I was. I used to work for a show.
Yeah,
but but are you in Virginia now?
I'm in Virginia, right outside of D.C.
Oh, cool, man. So, all right, dude. So, I can't thank you enough. There was something else that somebody was going to ask you here. I'm trying to find it now. I don't know. Someone had a question for you. Everybody's saying, I know what I was going to ask you. But first, everyone's saying that you should be attorney general. How the hell do you get that job, Glenn? And can you please be the attorney general?
Well, first of all, I'm an old school guy. If Joe Biden asked me to come paint the walls of the White House, I would come paint the walls of the White House. So do I have some hope of going back to government and holding these political criminals accountable? I do, in whatever capacity I can be useful. So, I'm going to wait and see. I did 30 years inside the federal government. I could do another 5 or 10.
And then the last question that has irked me, and I'm going to just ask you, because I had Ellie Honig on. You know Ellie?
Great. Yeah, I love Ellie.
Yeah, but the one thing that he said when I was telling him about what you were saying about Trump and depraved heart murder, mm-hmm. he said that's a far stretch. That's not.
And, so depraved heart murder is murder too. And I think it's there because of the Woodward tapes, where we now know Donald Trump lied to us, deceived us, didn't tell us how deadly it was, and let us die. Right. That is depraved heart murder. And I love Ellie, but I don't think I respectfully disagree with him. Homicide liability is a lock. It's a lock. It's a lock on the lowest level of liability, which is manslaughter or negligent homicide. Depraved heart murder, too, is a higher burden. I think we've got that, too. But I wouldn't even need to bring that charge. I'll bring the lowest level, which just all I have to show is that he was grossly negligent. It was reasonably likely to cause death or serious bodily injury, and he thereby caused the death, meaning his conduct was a substantial factor in killing people. I can prove that in my sleep, John. That I can tell you. Put me in front of a jury. I will prove that in my sleep.
God, I hope you're right, because I would love to see this guy behind bars. And I'd love to see Bill Barr and the whole Trump crime family go behind bars.
They're all going down. They're all going down.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be great? Hey, Glenn, who do you want for the World Series?
I'm not a baseball guy. I'm a football guy.
Oh, who's your team?
So I was born and raised on the New York Giants because my pops was a Giants fan. Then in like 1990, I came down to D.C. The Army brought me down to D.C. and the Washington Redskins started to creep in. Now I'm just kind of fed up with football, but you know, I'm still by default, I guess I'm still a Skins guy.
Didn't you play football in college?
Yeah, I played high school and college, yeah.
At what college?
Washington and Lee University down in Lexington, Virginia.
Let me guess, a middle linebacker.
No, I was a center, dude. I was a center. Banging heads with a nose guard all day. I loved it. I loved it. I would still do it if I could.
All right, Glenn, thanks so much for coming.
All right, John, thanks for having me, buddy.
I'd love to have you on if you can. November 2nd, I'm having Anthony Scaramucci on. If you'd like to come on, I'd love to have you on with him.
I'm there.
All right, Glenn, I'll see you, all man.
Right, good seeing you.
All right, take care. The great prosecutor, Glenn Kirshner. I'm going to put up my link here. I'm going to do some spots, and then I'm going to answer all your questions. It could be political questions. It could be anything. Now, and I have a couple of announcements to make. There is my link, people, for PayPal. This show doesn't pay for itself. And speaking of paying, speedweed.com pays me in dividends. I'll tell you, last night I came home from the pub. I bought a chicken from Ralph's that was already made because I didn't feel like cooking because my oven's on the blink. I didn't feel like barbecue. So had my chicken with that green jalapeno sauce and stuffed artichoke. I'm probably going to get another one tonight. I got to tell you, I love artichokes. Those artichoke hearts, you take the hair off them. Oh, heaven. The texture, the taste, everything about it. I love peeling and getting to the – it's like, you know, like getting to the prize at the bottom of the bowl. Anyway, speedweed.com, they'll deliver sativa, indica, edibles, CBD, anything you want. If you're in L.A., you want weed, speedweed.com. Ask for my friend Gino, my good buddy over at speedweed.com. In fact, I got to get in touch with him because I think I need another batch. I'm running out, Gino. And then also, I am a betting man. I'm very happy to announce I kicked the crap out of Chris, the son of the owner of Pickwick Pub. His multiple scorgasms got killed by my team, the Dickheads. We routed him like 140-86. But anyway, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be on. You can still bet on the action at betonline.ag. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on something imaginable this season, from game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props. BetOnline.ag gives you more options to wager than any place online. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on win, division, and championship futures today. Head to betonline.ag online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And if you're looking for a house in Woodland Hills, 4647 Canoga Avenue, my good friend Craig Phelps, I'm listing it. There is my link. Now, I'm not done yet, so don't leave yet. Because I'll take my link off. There better be some donations in there. Yeah, I'm going to bully you now. And Patreon, I'm telling you right now, that Anthony Scaramucci show on November 2nd might just be exclusively from my YouTube and Patreon people. And I'm not trying to exclude anybody here, you know. But Patreon, I like to get that up and running. Hal Sparks has been unbelievable and showing me how it's done. A beer on the balcony this Thursday. I might have comedian Chad Zumach on. I reached out so far to Kevin Brennan, but he's doing a show. He's opening for Louis C.K. right now. I love Kevin Brennan. But yeah, go to my Patreon. It's patreon.com/stutteringjohn. It's only $5 a month if you go for the lowest tier. $5 a month. Come on, people. That's like a fraction of Netflix. It's nothing. Come on, $5 a month. Anyway, Ian, you know what? I am going with the Dodgers. Why? Because I can't stand the Rays. Why? Because they try and bean my Yankees, and I can't stand some of the players there. But I am happy they beat the Astros because there's no team besides the Red Sox, of course, that I despise more than the cheating Astros. But I don't like the Rays. So I am going to, believe it or not, I'll be rooting for the Dodgers. Not a fan, but I don't have any reason to hate them. And hell, I live in L.A., so a lot of my friends are Dodger fans. So I'm going to go and I'll root for the Dodgers today. I'll be at the pub and I'll be rooting for the Dodgers. First, I'm going to go to go down to Ralph's and get some groceries for my cuisine tonight. Not sure. I'm probably going to make some filet mignons, maybe a baked potato and a stuffed artichoke. That's what it's – maybe a salad. I don't know. I did my walk already. Got my new shoes on, my Urban Outfitters shoes I bought at Kohl's. They're so comfy. Hey, I got some new shoes on and everything's going to be right. I said, hey, I got some new shoes on. That's right. Paolo Nutini, new shoes. Check it out. Joe Long, Baba Booeyville. Let's see, Aaron Hawk. And by the way, Aaron, I liked your joke before. I thought lawyers passed the bar, not enter it. Liked it. The Dodgers, isn't that the team whose fans put other teams' fan in comas? I don't know anything about that. Good as gold. Thank you. John, I love when you introduce two greats on each other. I love when you introduce two greats to each other on your podcast. Thank you very much. Odell Chick, love you, John. Joe Long, they booed Trump. Who did? Oh, Washington Nationals, right? Let's see. G Count, I couldn't believe your hypocritical ageism comment towards Dianne Feinstein after you've nailed me for months saying people are too old. What did I say about Dianne Feinstein? She's 87. Look, Joe Biden is what, 78? All right, 87. And you know what? I don't even mind her. But she's freaking hugged Lindsey Graham, the traitor, the treasonous prick. And she hugged him and complimented him. That, to me, sounds like she's losing cognitive ability to see what a two-faced scumbag that he is. So that's why, G Canada. Mark P. Johnson, you're backing the Dodgers. Maybe it's time for you to make peace with Tommy Lasorda. I don't have any problem with Tommy Lasorda. You know, I was doing a comedy bit for the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. By the way, vote out hate. This is my shirt from Midas Touch. I got to say one thing, and I'm not going to – it's nothing bad because I like the boys at Midas Touch, Brett, Ben, and Jordy. They're a good bunch of guys. They're fighting for the right cause. But I've been asking him to come back on this program for the last, I don't know, I want to say like, I don't know, for the last month. And they've been blowing me off saying they're too busy before the election. Now, granted, I know they are putting out a lot of videos out there. And they're great videos. I'm a fan of theirs. Ben got me my great attorney, Michael Popak. Who, by the way, we should hear from Sirius very, very soon about their response to my lawsuit. But I like all the guys at Midas Touch. But, you know, I have to write this back because – and I had to just say to him, I went, you know what, guys? I had you on in the very beginning before anybody knew of you. You know, you don't want to alienate someone that had you on in the beginning. That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't know. They didn't respond to that. I'm not like, you know, I'm still a fan of theirs and, you know, I'm not hating on them. I just think that, you know, they should, now I found out what's wrong with my microphone. It's nothing. It's this freaking thing. This thing that I bought has gone south of me already. Motherfucker. It was only $25, but now I got to get another one because that's the problem. It wasn't my microphone at all. It was the plug-in. Because I had my power thing plugged in and my power button wasn't working. And now my power button's working. I got to reach out to Opie. You know? Opie, you know, Greg Hughes, the Opie podcast. Look, I love Opie. He's a good guy, but I got to talk to him about a few things because, you know, he's spending too much time thinking about people that really, you know, don't matter to anybody. And, you know, he should really, like, you know, he shouldn't waste his time on those kind of people hating two-faced bastards. Good as gold. Sometimes John sounds like Rodney Dangerfield. Hey, let me tell you, I get no respect. Hume Gmail, will Jackie the Joke Man ever be back on your podcast? No, I don't think so. Jackie, if for some reason, is mad at me. You know, I've always said the same thing about Jackie. It's in my book. When he left the Stern Show, it was a really dumb decision. I warned him not to go. I asked him, I said, Jack, please stay for five more years. Five more years, you'll have enough money. You'll have $4 million in the bank. You'll never have to work again. Jackie didn't listen to me, didn't take my advice, left the show, and I think he made a bad mistake. Now, he hasn't been very nice to me. He's canceled gigs on me with Bill Kinison, the brother of the late, great Sam Kinison. So I just said, Jackie, it was me and Royce. We were like, Jackie always gets in the way of Jackie. There's no other way around it. He does it all the time. So that's what I said. Jackie apparently can't take a little bit of criticism. He's like, it's okay that he would trash me in any podcast, but I trash him. And then he goes, you know, he doesn't want to work with me. I don't really give a crap. F Jackie. I don't hate him, though. I love Jackie. You know, I do not hate Jackie. I just think that Jackie gets in his own way, and he's been doing that all his career. He keeps on doing it nonstop. And, you know, so, you know, I don't know. Shorty won. Jackie left huge, huge, huge money on the table. Millions. He did. It was a dumb decision. He knows it. If he doesn't know it, then he's really, really kidding himself. But it was a dumb freaking decision. He can't handle me saying that. That's too bad. See, this is what the problem I have with Jackie is. And, you know, I know this might be inside baseball. Yeah, I do have a fan there, Nikki B. Could you hear it? But, you know, like, I'm in Vegas. Jackie and I are doing a gig in Vegas. I call Jackie. Jackie, hey, I'm here. Let's hang out, you know, whatever. Jackie never calls me. I get lice, and I'm quarantined to my own room. Jackie goes out for a steak dinner, doesn't even call, see how I'm doing, doesn't ask if he wants me to bring him up a steak. No phone call, no nothing. At the gig, Penn Jillette is there, and Jackie and Bobby Slayton are going to go to a Penn Jillette's podcast and hang out at his house. I said, Jack, it's okay. You know, bring me along. Does Jackie even bother to call me? No. Because Jackie doesn't care about anybody but Jackie. And when Jackie canceled for the second time at the Bill Kinison, at the Grove, Bill Kinison's club, this is the funniest email in the world. He sends me an email going, you know, I have an audition and it's time that I start thinking about myself, and I'm just sitting there laughing. Jackie, when have you ever not thought about yourself? It's always about you. Always. So, but again, I had some great times with Jackie. We used to party. And Jackie became, this is the one thing like that drives me nuts about people. Look, if you're, all right, Jackie and I used to drink beer like it was going out of style in Babel. We used to hang out in Babel, get drunk, smoke weed. Jackie would make lobster and clams and corn on the cob. We would have the best times. We'd go out to dinner, me, Susanna, Nancy, and Jackie. We would always have great times. Thank you, Joel Long. John gives excellent rendition of Jackie. But, Eugene Mel, I got lice because my son had longer hair. He was in school. He slept in my bed one night, and he put his head on my arm, and I had all bites on my arm. So I guess he had given it to me. And then I asked my ex-wife. She said, yep, Oscar's got the lice, and that's how I got it. Even though I didn't have any in my hair or anything, but the hotel owner at the freaking South Point Casino was concerned that, you know, I spread the lice to the people at the casino. You know what? I saw the prostitutes at South Point. I think you should be more concerned about them spreading something else than lice. But anyway, you know, I don't know where I was with Jackie, but that's just, you know, I don't know what else you could say about Jackie. As soon as he sobers up. So then Jackie stops drinking. And then what does, like any, I don't know if you have any friends that do this. As soon as they sober up, what do they become? Preachers on those who still drink. And that's what Jackie became with me. Maybe you should stop drinking. Oh, yeah, Jack. Really? You've been drinking since you were 10 years old. You stopped when you were 65. And now suddenly you're a preacher on drinking. I hate when these people do this. And the same thing goes for vegans, right? You know, when they were eating meat, it was all good. And as soon as they stop eating meat, then they want to preach to you about all the bad things about eating meat. Guess what? I don't want to hear it. I like my chicken. I like my steak. I like my turkey. I like my lamb. And I like my duck. I like my lobster, and I like my king crab legs. And there ain't a frog fat ass thing you're going to do about it. So don't be preaching to me about your drinking and what. And don't start telling me that I shouldn't be. Look, have I had a drink today? No. Have I drank at all this morning? No. Did I go on my 3-mile walk today? Well, I don't know if it was 3 miles today. It was my shorter version. But did I do a 30 to 45 minute walk today? Yes. Did I pump iron yesterday? Yes. Do I eat healthy? Yes. Don't start preaching to me about drinking Coors Light and PBR and Miller Lite. It's practically water. G Canada, lamb is thoroughly disgusting. It's not my favorite. I don't mind. It's a little gamey, but I don't mind it. Shorty, one goose liver and vodka. No, not eating any liver. The Colonel, I just joined PETA. People eating tasty animals. All right, there you go. Good as gold. I know, Glenn said he loves PBR. Well, it just so happens at the pub they don't have a Miller Lite. So the closest thing is PBR. So that's what I get. So after this show, I'm going to have some more of that roast chicken. I had a leg, and I'm going to have a little bit more, see small portions. Then I'll mosey on over to the pub. Then I'll take my Uber back home, hang out on my balcony. I love hanging on my balcony. I love to people watch. And then, plus I'm the property manager, in case anybody needs to get a hold of me. But, I forget where I was with the Midas Touch Boys. Yeah, I just think they should come on the show. I mean, come on. Nobody's that busy. I hate when people say, I'm too busy. You know, we're too busy. Half an hour, you come on. Goodness gold. I don't hate being property managed because I love helping people. I just hate some of these people who call me at 11:30 at night expecting me to, like, fix a problem because somebody parked over the white line onto that spot. Circle jerk of corruption buster. Does Rudy really have Hunter videos, images, or is it fake Q stuff? Show us the goods. It's all phony. That whole story is just another Republican attempt to, you know, try and sway the election in their favor. But it ain't going to work this time because we're smart to you now. Well, we are smart to you. Let's see. Joe Long, good to see you again, John. I don't catch this show much. Now, again, everybody, I'm going to put this link up. I don't care. I don't care. You know, look, I understand if people have, I mean, we are like, look, it's the pandemic. So if you don't have any money, I get it. But if you do, you want to like, you know, donate a few bucks, there's the link. You could also become a Patreon member. You could super chat me. And we'll guarantee that I keep the show going. And new equipment is coming, people. New equipment is coming. Now I got to order a new one of these things here. There's my Patreon. So if you want to become a Patreon member, Canadian Bacon, I became a member. SJ, thanks for adding the option. Thank you, Canadian Bacon. And thank you, Mark P. and Nikki B. and Good as Gold. You were, I think, the first three. And everybody else. I mean, I'm going to do all I can for people on Patreon. I mean, Beer on the Balcony every Thursday after Thursday's show. I'll have comedian guests on Beer on the Balcony. It's going to be a total free-for-all type show. Going to ask Larry the Cable Guy to come on. I'm going to ask all my celebrity friends to come on. And, it, you know, it should be a lot of fun. So please, if you want to have this content, go on to my Patreon. And I don't really want to hear from these freaking trolls because everybody has a paywall. I mean, you name it, every show does. Thank you, Ian Harrison. John, you think you can prank Trump or his idiot kids again? You know, thanks for the $5. I think if I can get my phone system set up, that's my next thing that I'm going to talk to Hal about because I'd like to get a phone system so I can have a phone thing and then you guys can call into the show and, you know, to be here on the balcony. Mark P., how about a Zoom for all of us Patreons to gather as well? What I'm going to do is I'm going to set, as Hal said, I'm going to set my Patreon. I'm going to do it on YouTube, but put it on listed. Put the link on Patreon. And on Thursday, Beer on the Balcony is exclusively just for the Patreon people. And I'm not being a dick here, but that's just what they pay for. And I'll give you a shout out, answer any question. Shorty One, don't feel bad for asking for donations. Everyone does it. I know, but you get all these idiots, these twidiots. I mean, it's just amazing. As we all know, COVID has canceled all my stand-up gigs. I had about 20 to 30, and it all got canceled. And really, I put a lot of this money into the, into the show. A new computer, green screen, cables, and now I'm getting lights and camera, a new camera, stands, lavalier, all different things, and I like to get a phone system. Joe Long, John, get a P.O. box. I promise I will donate. P.O. box? The hell, there's a billion ways you could donate. Good as Gold, grand piano. I went in Budapest, man, my hidden treasure chest. Golden grand piano, my beautiful Castillo, you. Ooh, you. Oh, you, Olivero, just went from George Ezra to Jackie the Joke Man. Canadian Bacon, after the election, what direction will the show go in? Well, it all depends. If Biden wins, I will stay doing politics until the dotard leaves office in January 20th. On January 21st, we will go back to entertainment, and hopefully some of you guys will stay on. Now, if the Republicans start to do some dumb crap, you know, and try and block Biden and Harris and their administration, then I will dedicate a show or two to simply tearing them down. Chief Canada, I agree with Joe. P.O. Box would be good. Do no electric transfers. Well, you know, you can't be that paranoid about electronics. Yeah, so this show will stay political until January 20th. If Trump should steal the election, then I'll just stay on and I will tear him a new a-hole. Ziggy, yes, go to the Patreon homepage. Let's see. Mark P., the Postal Service ain't exactly reliable with DeJoy in charge. No, they're not. Charlie Kelting, Chad was not trolling me. Chad was defending me. And I applaud him for his for being honorable. You know, I don't know, man. Look, I don't make it a freaking habit of trashing other comics. I think the only one, you know, that really is actually a comic was Artie Lang, and that's only because he trashed me. But I don't choose to trash other comics. They're trying to make a living, and I'm not going to sit there and trash them in front of the face or on this program. I mean, granted, you know, I'll have a few laughs with some of my comedian friends about some of the comedians out there, but I'm not going to publicly trash a comedian. It isn't who I am, and I mean stand-ups. But Chad Zumach did the right thing. He did not trash me, and for that, I applaud him because you know integrity is very important, and so is friendship, and that was a hell of a thing for him to do. Any other questions? Shorty One saw an ad that Trump is saying don't vote for Biden because Pelosi will secretly want to remove Biden and install Kamala as president. That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. And if it's true, then he's just lost it. Well, we all know he lost it. Let's see. What was this? Yum Gmail, is Chad still getting trolled for defending you? You know, yeah, he is. You know, but they're only the same three people. Same three trolls and the different names. They're nobodies. They're losers. They're sitting in their parents' basement. They're armchair bullies. And, you know, they're just ass wipes. And you know, UMG Mail, I'm not going to mention this person's name. You know, I don't know why anybody would trash Chad Zumach. He's a nice dude, and he keeps his word. And I fully support him. And whoever trashes him is just pathetic in my book. Nikki B. John, are you going to do a live show on election night? Probably. I probably will. I believe that's a... yeah, of course. Nikki B., what was the song I told you to listen to? Was that Holy Mother? Look, if any of you have lost a loved one and you want to have a good cry, go to YouTube and watch and listen to Holy Mother by Luciano Pavarotti and Eric Clapton. They played it at my father's wake. My mom had discovered it. She's a Pavarotti fan like weeks before. And yeah, I'd have thought that was a song. And, you know, whenever I hear it, I think about my dad and it brings tears to my eyes. R.I.P. Dad. But it's a great, beautiful song. I mean, I guarantee you put that on, you will cry. Yeah, that's right, Mark P. Pavarotti and Clapton. It's freaking awesome. It's such a great song. And it always makes me tear up. Holy Mother, where are you? My heart is breaking in two. It's awesome. And then when Pavarotti kicks in, Holy Mother, where are you? I told you, Nikki B, it would make you cry. It really does. It's that beautiful of a song. Someone asked me today, and Hal Sparks answered, although I disagree with his answer, but it's just a matter of taste. The best threesome band, you know, three-member band. Hal Sparks said King's X. Now, me, it was between Rush and the Police. Come on. How can you top Rush or the Police as far as, you know, a three-piece? I don't know. King's X, come on. I mean, how many songs could you name from King's X? Crosby, Stills, Nash, but there were more people in the band. You know, they had drummers and bass players, so you can't really go by that. I mean, Shorty won just a day ago. I got done binge-watching Cobra Kai. Can't wait for season three. I know, I can't either. Cobra Kai, I love that freaking show. Awesome. Aaron Hawk, Destiny's Child, hello. LOL, just kidding. No, no. Rush, the Police, trying to think. Oh, the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Who else was there? Three-piece. Was Cream three-piece? Can't remember. The Losers. No, we were four-piece. The Losers. Great band. Me on bass, Fred on guitar, Howard on keyboards, and Scott the Engineer on drums. And don't forget, I wrote the melody, lyrics, verse, and chorus to, what the hell did I name the, what the hell did I name the song? Hold on a second. Skunk. That was the name of the song. You get me high, get me high, get me high. ZZ Top, The Bird Show. There we go, Nikki B. ZZ Top, Nirvana, Ian Harrison. There you go. Yum Gmail, how is Scott the Engineer doing these days? I haven't talked to him. I'd like to talk to him, but I haven't. I wish he would come on the show. I'd love to have him on for the beer on the balcony. You know, there are a lot of people I have to get on. I had Monique from Radio Gunk on Beer on the Balcony. I love Monique. Yeah, Radio Gunk, I heard. But again, what what he says is so ridiculous. Okay? You know, calls me a psycho, yet he's arrested for strangling a woman. He's a racist, borderline pedophile, and he says I'm not a good guy. Really? And I don't even know why he's saying anything about me, because I did his show last time. I thought we were amicable. I don't know why the hell he's chosen to, you know, to go to talk about me, but I don't even care. I'm not punching down. I refuse. Not in my nature. Green Day. There's a good three-piece. You know what? I smell a troll with you, Gunk. Chad said he was trolling you by pretending to like you. Nah, untrue. I talked to Chad. Untrue. Good as gold. Who are these people? Anyway, they are so irrelevant, I know. And I'm not punching down. Ian Harrison, I should offer a Patreon perk to be a guest on your show. Sure. I'll tell you what. That's a good idea. The Berg Show, Green Day has an extra guitarist. Yeah, but not initially. Oh, Blink 182. There's another one. See, there's a lot that we don't think about. But anyway, yeah, I'm not punching down. So, you know. Yum Gmail, do you remember when Hum played on the Stern Show? Yes, I do. It's Stars they played, I believe. Their song Stars. Sagacious Zoo hates you. Best three-piece group, Bananarama. I don't think so. But you know what I am looking forward to? I don't usually start my Christmas music till after Thanksgiving because I don't want to get sick of the songs. But my favorite Christmas song of all time is Do They Know It's Christmas, the original Band-Aid. There is not a better Christmas song. Number two, Happy Christmas, War Is Over, John and Yoko. Number three, hold on. REM, are they a three-piece? Not sure. Hold on a second. There's another one up in there. Oh, let's see. Do they know Are you guys still there? All right, I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. But for some reason, one of these plugs is, I don't know. I guess my computer, it ran out of power. But if you're still there, I don't know what the hell was that about. Anyway, I guess you all left. I don't blame you. Bye, Nikki B. Andrew, I know I was frozen. Canadian bacon laptop overheated. I don't know. Mark P., the show was going so well. Jen's issues aside. I don't know what the hell it is. Yeah. Oh, that Sean's there. Yeah, but it was plugged in. The laptop was plugged in and it ran out of charge. I don't really understand what the freak happened. Nor do I, you know, I can't wait till this thing, you know, I take this air and send it back to Apple and go, you know, you should never sell this computer to anybody. You know? Can't wait to get rid of this air. Amy Sue Kate, see you, John. Good show. Yeah, I don't know why it ran out of charge. I don't know what the hell's going on. I just tried a different plug, and now it appears to be working. It said it was charging, but I don't know. But anyway, sign up for the Patreon. I promise it'll be worth your while. Thank you, Amy Suke. I just saw that. Just joined Patreon. We got to get you all on there. We got to get your asses all on there to my Patreon. When I get rid of this computer, then all things hopefully will be solved. I up my internet. It's plugged in directly to the modem. Mark P., who you got for Thursday's show? I'm working on Chip Franklin. I'd like Monica Fudge said she's too busy, which stinks. I'd like to get a real big win on this Thursday, too. So, I mean, I love Chip. He's incredibly informative. If you guys have any suggestions, I know Greg Oliar gave me one. I love having Greg on. I mean, he's always great. But, you know, so we'll see. Yeah, I know. Chip's always a good guest. There, Mark P. I'll tell you what, since we lost a few minutes, if you have any more questions, I'll answer it, and then I'll get the hell out of here. Michael Mattson, why is John using a fake backdrop? What do you mean? That's my mansion in Santa Barbara. The hell are you talking about? I mean, Santa Monica. The hell? What? You know, a guy can't hang out at his summer home? Hockey Canada 25. When is beer on the balcony? Thursday, 3:30 PST. I don't know where you're going to be, Sean, but I'll probably give you, you know, a phone call a little later. I love chatting with Sean. He's my new buddy. He's my new phone buddy. See if we have any more questions. In the meantime, I do want to thank Nikki B. Yeah, I don't know what happened. But now the computer's charging. It's in the same socket, well, the same light fixture. I mean, but it's just, you know, I just plugged it from the top to the bottom one. I don't know what the hell's wrong with it. But, you know, I was pretty much on my way to end the show anyway. Okay. I got you, Sean. But, yeah, and then let's see. We're 2 weeks away from the election, so I might up it the last week to maybe five shows a week. And then, you know, and then just hopefully – maybe I'll go live. I'll simulcast with Hal Sparks. I haven't asked him yet, but maybe he'd be into that. and then we'll do a live simulcast of the election. You know, it depends. Hal will be able to pull it up. So if we could watch as, you know, as we speak, I don't know. Michael Madsen, yeah, look, please vote. Well said. Really, guys and gals, this is it. This is it. If we want to preserve our democracy, this is it. If we want to preserve what we know America is, then this is it. So, any more questions before I go? I want to thank speedweed.com, betonline.ag. I want to thank 4647 Canoga Avenue, Craig Phelps in Midland Hills. And I want to thank my guests today, Glenn Kirshner and Jennifer Cohen, for being so great. I appreciate all the guests that come on this program. They are doing the Lord's work, because we have to keep people informed. I want all of you guys to be informed so you could tell your family, you could tell your friends, and then everybody is listening and going out and voting and making sure that their vote is counted. My ex is calling me. Oh, probably not my ex. I see. What's this? Okay. Just having to make sure that everything is copacetic. I look forward to watching the game tonight. I can't believe I'm going to be rooting for the Dodgers. It's so sad because I'm not a Dodger fan, but I don't know. I mean, I have no choice. I like Mookie Betts, though. Yeah, I know he was a Red Sox, but I don't know. I love that he's always like this. Yeah. Little snarl. And the guy from the Rays, too. I forget his name. Always like this. Always pissed off. Got the snarl on him. Javatown, is this a green screen? Well, I'll let you decide. I'll let you decide. I mean, there's my piano back there. There's my couch. There's my front door. All right. And anything else anybody has before I get the hell out of here? Got to go to the supermarket and then get the hell to the pub. Hang out with the boys, have a few pints. Mark P., I can't root for the Dodgers. I understand your reasons, John, but the Rays are a great story. Nah, I like Kevin Cash. I'll give you that. I think he's a good coach. He's a good manager, but I just can't stand freaking the team. And by the way, how about my Giants? The New York Football Giants are now one game out of first place with a record of 1-5. Daniel Jones is starting to he's starting to look decent. And the Giants defense is looking better and better. Come on, Big Blue. Let's go. You can do this. Stranger things have happened. Don't forget, the last two Giants Super Bowls that were won, they came in at 9-7. I believe they were wild cards. Javatown, what's the shadows shaking in the left-hand corners? Those are cockroaches. Michael Maxson, thanks, John. Let's celebrate a Biden victory podcast style soon. Mark P., the NFC East is horrible. None of those teams are any good. Yeah, Papa Puppet. Jones needs a better offensive line, but they did get a couple of rookies. Give them a little time. All right, guys, listen. This is Stuttering John saying, Gagia, get off your asses and vote in November.